You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
All right, hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, what is it, the 20th or something? 21st? 20th?
I wanted to tell you, but I don't know because Siri has taken over my phone.
Anyway.
The 20th. Monday the 20th. Hey, you're listening to it right the first time.
There it is. You're listening to episode, I don't know. I'm driving, so I can't check. Doesn't matter. We're driving home from Origins. My name's Rob. There's Jason.
Yes.
We're driving home from Origins. It's about 10 a.m. We're on Highway 117. Going north through Ohio.
The beautiful state of Ohio.
Ohio. Round on the sides and high in the middle, as they say.
Whoa.
Yeah. We're going on about 5 hours of sleep after about 6 hours of sleep the night before. So typical convention structure there.
Woo.
So Origins happened. That was the thing.
Yeah, we wanted to record Origins, as we always want to. Best laid plans, right? There just was literally no time or location to sit down and record with everyone.
Yeah, half the place was under construction, so stuff was kind of chopped up weird.
Yeah. So there were no real quiet spaces. Not that the car is a quiet space, but it's at least a reliably room-tony space. So, We apologize for not being able to record with some others, but, you know, it happens sometimes. We did get to talk to a lot of people, though, and we will tell you about our awesome conversations with said people. Uh-huh. And that recreation will be almost as good as them being on the show. In fact, I would argue with some of those conversations, our recreation will likely be better than them being on the show.
More concise, anyway.
Yeah.
There was a moment last night as we were walking back from dinner. It was you and I and Neil Roberts and Chris Zinsley was with us, right?
Yeah.
And we were walking back and we're like, oh, crap, we got to record a show. Chris and Neil, you need to be on the show. And Neil's like, no, I just want to go play some games. And then I said, you know what? Me too.
Yep.
So we just went back and played some games instead of recording.
But then the whole way back, Neil explained to us how being on Building the Game is on his bucket list. And he could have checked that off, and he didn't. So
bad, sorry.
Bad job, buddy. Bad
and
job.
And you're like 6 months behind on listening to our show, so you won't hear this for like a year and a half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You'll
that's funny.
That happened. So also in that conversation, you said that you wanted to give me $1,000. So when you finally get to this, hey, dude, you still owe me that money. Remember when you said that? I remember it.
I remember it. I heard it clearly.
Right. So
it's like, Rob, I kind of want to give you $1,000. And you said, oh, wow, thanks. And he was like, yeah, no problem, man. Just remind me later. Well, hey, guess what?
Guess what? There it is.
Yep. There's your reminder.
We recorded it, man. So you can't forget.
Yep. Good.
That's a
good
thing.
Good times. So, yeah. So, let's talk a little. Let's start out with, do we want to talk about kind of our expectations coming down?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, yeah. So, the things we knew coming into it, when obviously we were hoping to see a lot of people, have a lot of fun talking, playing games with people.
Yep.
I had one pitch session set up that was for Ramblers, and I was excited about that. And, really it was just excited to see friends and play games and hopefully make some publishery type connections.
Yeah.
What about you?
Pretty much the same. I wanted to, my number one goal is to play games with people. And I brought the production copy of Saloon Tycoon with me.
Yes.
And so I already had a couple of dates set up to play that with some backers and some friends. So wanted to make sure I got that done, play as much of that as I possibly could. And I wanted to get some playtesting done on Treasure Trouble and on Scrappers. And hopefully kind of have an informal howdy-do hey, how's it going? Yeah, this is a thing with somebody about scrappers.
Cool.
Super unofficial and informal. That was a goal.
All right.
Also, I guess, to find a birthday present for my wife.
Yeah. Also a plan you had.
Yep.
So on that line, I needed to find stuff for my kids, as always. So
yeah.
All right. So we came down on Friday. Uh-huh. It was a pretty uneventful trip. We got up pretty decently early. We got to start about 9 o'clock, a little before.
Yeah.
And
got lost in Ohio.
We did get lost in Ohio, thanks to detour signs that just basically were on a detour, and then they just decided the detour ended, but didn't tell anyone.
Right. They're like, you know what? We know that you wanted to get to that place. We're just going to make sure you go the opposite direction through half the detour, and then we're just going to not worry about the detour signs and hope you figure out the rest.
So basically, the detour put us in the wrong direction and then never rerouted us, so that was cool.
We ended up backtracking about 4 miles.
Yeah, so it could have been worse. Luckily, Rob was like, this feels like the wrong direction. Can you map this? And Siri was like, hey, get on this highway and then drive past the same things you already drove past. So, but it was only 10, 15 minutes wasted, so.
Yeah, that's fine.
So we got out there pretty early. It was the early afternoon. I have to give credit to Origins, their check-in system.
Baller.
Yeah, so if you have a pre-registration, you just walk up, scan a QR code type thing, barcode, and it just prints out your badge, and they put a foil sticker on it that says your badge is not fake, and then you walk down, pick up your swag, and you're done. Like, and I heard they had some problems on the first day, because they had some printer issues, which, you know, not totally surprising with technology, but kudos to them for cleaning it up.
Yeah.
And trying to make the system suck less. And I also, I did not see huge lines on Saturday.
No, I didn't.
So I would have to say that they accomplished at least some of that goal. So good for them.
Yeah.
The other thing we noticed going around Origins was there was a time we were sitting in the board game room playing board games, and I said to Rob, this could be Gen Con. Like, this is...
Yeah.
They've really expanded and made this nicer. We weren't there last year, so it's been 2 years since we've been down. And, they've really made it better. The vendor area was much better set up, much bigger.
Much, much bigger.
Yeah. Well, actually, the vendor area, I want to say, was probably the same size, but actually filled with vendors. Like,
oh, yeah.
2 years ago when I was there, they had a vendor hall that was about the same size, but it was so spread out. It was like, you know, vendors had, like, huge booths and a bunch of gaps between them and stuff. And so, so I feel like they did a much better job of...
Yeah, agreed.
...of trying to make it, you know, usable and nice.
Yep. Yeah, in general, better organized, better laid out. I think, I don't know, but it's, to me, it seemed better attended.
Yeah. Hey, it seems like if you make your con better, more people come to it.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's cool.
Actual raw numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's true, but it anecdotally seemed like there were more people and that they were happier and that everything was better. So,
yeah.
Still wish the vendor hall was a little bigger or a little more diverse in their stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, they sell what they can sell.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, think about Grand Con, right?
Yeah.
And that, the vendor hall is a lot smaller.
True.
But I felt like it had a lot cooler random things, so...
Did have more randomness, yeah. More surprises, I guess.
Yeah. And I think part of that is because being a smaller con, I'm sure their booths are a little more affordable.
Sure.
So that means that your average crafty-type person could swing a booth.
Yeah,
that's so true. I think because of that, you get some more diversity. And I just think that's cool because... I mean, at Gen Con, you get a lot of diversity, but it's simply because there's so many things at Gen Con.
Yeah.
You're bound to have people who do different oddball stuff who can afford booths.
Sure.
But at an Origins, you know, I just feel like probably the foot traffic to cost ratio isn't great for the oddball stuff, right? Yeah,
kind of a middle ground there.
Right. But, you know, so anyways, that was just something I noticed. And I mostly noticed that because I was looking for stuff for my kids. And, you know, so that's the stuff where the oddball stuff comes in handy.
Yeah.
I think about the lady at Grand Con who made those awesome blocky stuffed animal things.
Oh, those are cool, yeah.
Yeah, so I have a feeling if Josiah comes up, we'll end up with another one of those this year.
You got Iron Man last year?
Yeah. I think I'm going to just preemptively see if I can contact that lady and ask her to bring a Leonardo one, because that's what he actually wanted.
Oh.
It was the only Ninja Turtle she didn't have.
Oh.
So he was happy enough with Iron Man.
Okay.
So, yeah. think we're gonna need to do that.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, so overall, positive stuff. I'm excited about the opportunity to maybe come again next year.
Yeah, and I feel like there were more of our friends here this year than there were 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know, so more people we know, and I mean, we've gotten to know more people in that 2 years as well, so that helps.
Right.
But yeah, more people that that we're buddies with, and just more variety of experiences.
Yeah.
In general. So very impressed with Origins this year.
So let's talk about kind of how they just want to walk through the days.
Yeah.
It's usually the easiest way. So we got there Friday. We walked around the vendor hall for about 20 minutes trying to locate some things.
You were looking for a person, and I was looking for the Playco booth to see the Epic Monster Tea Party display. We didn't find either.
Right, no.
And we kind of had, we had a couple of people wait, or I had a couple of people waiting for me in the board game area to play Tycoon.
Right.
So we just kind of made a beeline. Oh, and then you found out that the guy that you were looking for was going to be in there.
Yeah, so that worked out.
Yeah.
So you immediately went and started playing Saloon Tycoon.
Right.
How'd that go?
Great. I played with Eric and Paul and Matthew and I don't remember who the fourth was. Maybe it was Chris. No, Chris played in the second game. I don't remember who the fourth was. Anyway, yeah, so the first game was great. I think everybody had a really good time.
Cool.
And then actually ended up playing a second game immediately after that I played it several times. I'm forgetting everybody who... I'm just going to name everybody that I can remember who played right now, okay? So I know Paul played it twice. I know Mike was a backer who backed it, and his wife, who I think was Christina, I think was her name. And Chris Zinsley played. Matthew was a backer, I think. Anyway, I don't know. I can't remember everybody. But I think over the course of the weekend, I ended up playing it four times, I think.
Yeah, and I kept seeing you play it, and I just never got over to play it. I was a little jealous, because I haven't got to play the fancy copy yet, you know?
Yeah.
The real deal.
Yeah. So anyway, so I played two games of that in a row, which was awesome. But anyway, and then you found your guy.
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, so the Saloon Tycoon, I didn't get to play it, but I got to play with it. And, like, Rob let me look at it and stuff. Wow, man, like, so things that happened in the Kickstarter, like, oh, we're going to make the tiles thicker, and I thought, oh, that sounds kind of neat.
Wow. Yeah.
Does that make a difference?
It does, doesn't it?
It feels like you're playing with, like, wood pieces. I mean, they're so big and heavy.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Thayer Road, as it sounds like she's saying. We're the same place as last time where she confused us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Siri. So, but anyways, this the quality of the Saloon Tycoon stuff is fantastic.
Yeah,
I was
really,
so
really
impressed.
Happy with that.
That is a box that is really heavy, could be used as a weapon in a zombie apocalypse. If you find yourself in AJ Porfirio's "If I'm Going Down" in real life, you better have backed Saloon Tycoon, because
it'll stop bullets.
It will.
And trust me.
Bash zombies.
My shoulder hurts from lugging that thing around all week.
I know, right? And you had it, like, wrapped in the foam to keep it safe.
So, I had one of those like, crossed rubber bands to hold the box shut tightly, and then wrapped in foam.
Yep.
Because AJ said, don't hurt it.
Yes, AJ, I will attest, if you're listening to this, Rob did a very good job of being very careful with that game. So that was awesome. So I went and immediately had a meeting with a publisher.
And
this is a publisher I've never met before. Obviously, I'm not going to say who, but I've never met them before. And so it was a very interesting experience. I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. Publisher turned out to be the nicest dude, and I loved it. So this is kind of what happened, right? I went in to pitch Ramblers, right? So I started talking about Ramblers, and dude seems pretty into it. He had some concerns, and we addressed those as we went, and I felt like that was good. It served me well, because, like, It showed I was really easy to work with. I was very open to suggestion. Even things that were a little more core to the game where they said, hey, what if... This could be a problem. And I don't want to go into details, but, you know, and I just was like, oh, well, we could swap it this way or do this. And he seemed impressed that I was willing to do that and could think on my feet like that. So
sure.
Thanks, building the game. For So that was going all right. And, you know, I thought, you know, he might be interested. And he said, when you get home, shoot me an email to remind me to go through the rules and some more and talk it over with some people. And if I think I like it, we'll ask for a prototype. Sounds great. Okay. I was hoping for better than that, but...
That's a positive reaction.
It was not negative.
Yeah.
So anyways, after that, we didn't have, like, a scheduled time, but I knew he was free for another about 15 minutes, so I was like, you know what... I'm going to try and pitch him another game. So I pulled out Minecart Man. I said, can I just show you a sell sheet? And he said, sure. And so I put it in front of him, and he said, well, what is this? Is this... And he said, kind of like this, he said, is this a racing game? And I thought, oh, crud. He doesn't like racing games. But I was like, yeah, it's a racing game. And he goes, I love racing games. And I thought, well, that's positive. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just went ahead and pulled the box out and started showing it to him. And he really, really liked it. I didn't plan on pitching it. I didn't even necessarily think that maybe that was in the company's something they'd be interested in, because I just didn't have a good feel for it. Turns out I was wrong. They really, really enjoyed it. And it went from send me an email to, hey, can I keep a couple pieces of documentation about this so that I can talk about it tonight? And can you come talk to me tomorrow? And I was like, hey, yes, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, should I to be continued that till we get to tomorrow?
That's probably
good. Keep the suspense up. Oh, let's do that. I like that.
Yeah.
So we shook hands. We parted as friends, and I felt really, really excited. Best first hour of a convention ever.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So what did we do after that? We played some games, I think. Didn't we?
So we played a bunch of games.
Or did we?
So I played two games of Saloon Tycoon back to back, and when that second one was over, there was like 30 minutes left before the hall closed. That was like 5:30. Gosh, was it that late? I guess it was.
Yeah, it was because
I wanted to run into the vendor hall and find the Playco booth and check out Tea Party, you know?
Yes. So before you did that, when I got done waiting, you're still playing Tycoon. I found Neil.
Yeah.
And we went to the vendor hall.
Yeah.
And we found the Playco booth.
Right.
And we were very excited with what we saw. And I will let you describe everything, but we were very excited about what we saw. And I also got to see their game, Danger, Danger, Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't really heard much about on Kickstarter.
They had a successful Kickstarter. Finished, I think, a little over a week ago.
Yeah, and so I hadn't heard much about it. And I just honestly didn't really pay attention to it for what the game was, right?
Uh-huh.
The game turned out to be a pressure luck dice game. It was more Dragon Slayer than Zombie Dice, right? Like, it was, I would say, even another level above Dragon Slayer. I'm not saying, like, it's that much better of a game, but just saying, like, it kind of actually reminded me of a Shipwreck Shores type of idea, right? Where you're doing more with the dice. You're buying more things and stuff, and I liked that. So, I told them I might come pick that up the next day, because they had it for sale. And their components are always really interesting and really unique. They do a really good job with that.
That's one thing I think that's cool about what they're doing is they're not just... I've talked with Will, the guy who runs Playco, and he's not just... He doesn't want to just, you know, go to Panda or go to Add Magic and say, put all this together for me. He is really, really interested in going out and sourcing different components from different suppliers and finding not only the best quality thing he can... But to buy in volumes that really give them an excellent price,
right?
And then they assemble all the games themselves in their office,
which sounds super daunting.
Super daunting, a lot of work, but he's able to save a lot of money and get some good quality stuff as a result, which I think is, kudos, right?
Yeah. They have these wooden bones in the game.
Yeah.
And they're huge. Mm-hmm. They're like three times the size of a meeple.
Yeah. And the Danger, Danger, Dinosaur thing, it's like a caveman theme and you're trying to run away from dinosaurs. Is that it?
You are trying to live your life and build stuff, right? And like do cool things.
Okay.
And like bring in relatives to hang out with you and stuff.
Okay.
And while you're trying to do all that to score points, there's dinosaurs. So, like, you start with all white dice, which are all resource dice, right?
Okay.
And you roll them once, and if you like that first roll, you can take everything in that, no penalties at all. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you want to roll again, you have to put in a dinosaur die.
Okay.
Which is a red die, and one side of the dinosaur die has an eye on it, and that is the dinosaur sees you.
Okay.
And you either have to stop, I think, or if you have a bone, you can give it a bone to make it leave you alone. I don't remember exactly, because they just gave me a quick run through, but...
Sure.
So it was. It's different, right? It's different. The artwork is fun and kind of goofy, and
same artist who did Tea Party.
Oh, was that?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that. So
Anna, it's Lepeshka or Lepeshnika?
Okay,
I'm not sure. She's Russian.
Yeah, she does good stuff. So after that, we went back, found you, and you wanted to go. You wanted to go into the hall, so. But we didn't go with you. I don't remember why.
No, I went on my own. I think you had something else you were playing.
Oh, that could be. Wish I remember what it was.
Yeah. So I went into the hall, and I had been told by then where that booth was, so I made a beeline straight for that. Will, who I mentioned before, was not able to make it, but Mike, his partner, was there. And I talked with Mike for a little while, and we talked about the components, right? So, first of all, they had a big vertical banner in the booth with Tea Party on it, and
your name on it.
And my name on it. And I got to tell you guys, I mean, that is super cool. That's super cool when you've been working on something, and it gets picked up, and then, you go to a convention, and there's a banner with your game and your name on it. That is super, super cool.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
feels really good, and I mean, it really is rewarding. Like, to think about all the work that we've done for the show and for these games. After doing this for so long, it's just cool to have that moment, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Neil and I, when we saw it, were pretty geeked.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, and then they had a full prototype there. The meeples, right? They're kind of the main thing, right?
Right.
And the meeples are custom made meeples. And when I looked at them, I thought that they had stickers on them to have the like character portraits on them.
Right.
Which, you know, I only ever imagined they would just be colored meeples. But they went so far as to have custom cut meeples made and have full color character prints on there. And I asked him, because I thought, like I said, I thought they were stickers, but he said no, that they're actually printed on the meeples themselves. And I don't know what process it was. It was kind of glossy, so, and it was a full color print. You know, it wasn't like a four color screen or something.
Turn right onto South Clear Road.
Okay, thanks, Siri.
They're beautiful,
right? It was some kind of a laser print process. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, it was beautiful though.
Like, yeah. Okay, so I want to turn right up here.
Yep.
Okay. Really, really impressed with that. I think he said the plan, previous plan, I think, was to launch the Kickstarter during Origins, but I think the revised plan is to launch it immediately after Origins.
In 1.4 miles, turn right onto Harding Highway.
Thank you. So anyway, that Kickstarter should be up soon. I'm sure, guys, watch my Twitter, and I'll be talking all about it. And of course, we'll be talking about it as soon as we know for sure that it's up.
And you're going to want to back it, because it looks really, really good.
Yeah, and so. I don't know what the price point's going to be yet, but I think it's going to be reasonably priced as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, he likes to try and buy stuff and assemble themselves so they can get quality stuff at better prices, which I'm sure will help the price point.
Yeah.
So certainly can't hurt it.
Right. Anyway, so it looked great. I, of course, took a ton of pictures. And then he had a couple other people come over to demo. So I didn't hang out for too long because I didn't want to waste his time. He's running his business there. But that was cool. That was super cool and super exciting. And Playco's going to have a booth at Gen Con as well. So both of my publishers, Playco and Van Ryder, are going to have booths at Gen Con.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, right. That's great. So after that...
So while you were doing that, I remember while you were doing it. I went and talked to Mark.
Turn right onto Harding Highway.
Harding Highway.
Harding Highway, thank you. I went and talked to Mark Spector, who's publishing my game, which I guess I can say the name of now since we were telling people all weekend.
Yeah, might as well.
Say hey. So my game, which was originally called Hip City a long time ago, and before that I was drafting the drafting game and all that jazz. The name of the game is Unreal Estates. That's Unreal Estates. And we got a lot of positive feedback about the name. This is my drafting game that that Mark is publishing with the Grand Gamers Guild. And I am super... I'm super jazzed on... I think this is where you're going straight.
A little weird
yeah.
jog, yeah.
Yes. So, we got to pass out some cool promo cards with some artwork.
4 miles. Turn left onto US 30 West.
Thank you, Siri.
I assume that means I get to share some artwork, at least the three pieces that we debuted at the con. So I'll double check that with Mark, and then I will be tweeting those if I did. So you guys may actually see those ahead of time before the show. But yeah, so I'm super excited about that. Mark and I had a great meeting, talked about what we're doing, and some other people that are helping on the project got to meet with them. And, you know, it's just been fantastic. And we actually had art coming over the weekend, and it's literally is the best stuff yet.
The was it the Orc Camp?
Yeah. It's, oh, my gosh.
Man, that is so cool.
Yeah, it is. It's insane. I can't even explain how amazing it is. And I'm not even just, like, saying that. Like, I can't believe that my game is going to have art that's that good.
It's great.
So, yeah. So, okay, so after that, we went to dinner, right?
Yeah, we had dinner, at the North Market place there.
Which was awesome. So we've been at Origins a few times and never knew that this place existed, and it's like a block away.
Mm-hmm. It's basically just kind of a big open market area. And
with a roof, though.
Well, yeah, with a roof, and it's two stories, and I guess different vendors have stalls in there. And it might be a vegetable stand, or it might be an ice cream counter, or it might be just like a full restaurant lunch counter kind of thing.
Yep.
And, you know, and there's a Polish place, and an Indian place, and a Chinese place, and a barbecue place.
I think an Italian place I saw.
Yeah, on and
there's
on.
There's like
on
a
on.
Salad place. It's, and then the world's best ice cream place, Jenny's Ice Cream.
Jenny's is pretty good.
Oh, that was good.
I think Plain Well Ice Cream back home is pretty darn good, too.
They don't have the amazing flavors, though, do they?
They have more traditional flavors, but I think it's pretty good ice cream.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Jenny's was very good. I had a Polish sausage and some pierogies for dinner.
Yeah, the Polish place was good. I ate there twice.
It was good. It was good. And that was you and I and Neil and Jody.
Yep, Neil's wife Jody and...
And was Chris with us?
Did Chris go with us the first night?
Or Jason was with us that time.
Jason was with us, yes.
Yeah, right.
Chris was with us.
Chris came with us the next
for day. Lunch, yeah.
Yeah, so.
All right. So, yeah, so we did that. And after, we went back to play some games.
Yeah.
So, played quite a few things that night.
Gosh, what did we play?
We got to play, we played Treasure Trouble, a bit of Treasure Trouble.
We did? Yeah.
we played Treasure Trouble. I think I got no, that was yesterday. Played Treasure Trouble. We played. Oh gosh, what other games did we play?
Man, it feels so long ago.
It does. It's crazy how long ago it feels when it was just yesterday.
Oh, I played a top secret game by Cardboard Edison.
Oh, nice,
a top secret that can't be announced.
Oh, and then we played a top secret game of Katarski's.
Yes, we did play that top secret
which
game.
Which was also super-duper fun.
Yeah.
We played a couple times, actually.
Yeah, that was good. I was not sure at first.
Yep, me
but,
either.
But that second time through, I was like, all right, yeah. Well, that's a stop sign I didn't see coming. So that was cool. Did we play Outlawed that night?
No.
No? Okay.
It was the next day.
It was the next day.
So we played a bunch of games. We went back to the hotel a little bit earlier because we were all tired and beat, and we were staying about a mile and a half away, so we had to drive out there and staying at the Holiday Inn, and yeah, so we parked there and realized we were all hungry. So,
well, you guys were hungry.
Well, we
were, yeah, so we were rooming with Katarski.
Yeah, so realized we were hungry, and there was this place right around the corner called 16-bit.
16-bit.
It was a barcade. And so we thought, we're going there. So we got there, and it turns out it looked really hip.
We were not young and attractive enough to be in that place.
Yeah, so... And it was packed. It was literally packed. Like, I don't know that we've been able to really play any games.
Nah.
So, but next door was a place called Dirty Franks.
Dirty Franks.
And Katarski was like, oh my gosh, I've heard about this place. It's amazing. So we're like, well, let's go here. So at like 11...
It's like at this point, it's like quarter to midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a divey hot dog
place.
Yeah, very small, crowded, but not overly crowded.
Decorated with bad paintings of, like, metal bands and metal singers.
Yeah, and they were so bad, they were good, though.
Yeah, right? Like, it was the best kind of bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really excellent.
Yeah, so we did that, and then we had these crazy hot dog...
I had a pretzel.
You had a soft pretzel.
You guys ate just the most horrible...
I had a hot dog that had... It was a hot dog with coney sauce, cheese, sour cream. I feel like there was another topping, but I don't remember what it was.
And a buttload of tater tots.
And then, like, a pound of tater tots. Oh, nacho cheese also.
Nacho cheese, good.
It
good
was
combo.
So... Oh, and there was french fries on mine, too, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Literally french fries on my hot dog. It was so amazing, though. Didn't feel great in the middle of the night, but... When we ate it, oh man, was it good.
Yeah.
So that was the first day at Origins. It was a jam-packed day of fun.
Yeah. So we crashed, and next morning we got up early because Jason had to get into the vendor hall so he can get to the booth where he was working.
Yep. That's Jason Katarski,
yeah.
Not me.
Yeah. Yeah, so we got there and we just kind of, we just basically, like, played games all day.
Yeah. We did. It was great. We walked the vendor hall because you and I really wanted to see what was in there. So we did that.
It wasn't open yet. So we played some games, and then the vendor hall opened, and then we went in the vendor hall.
Oh yeah, you're right.
What did we play that morning? Oh, I played another game of Tycoon.
Yep. And then we played Outlaw. Couldn't play that till after 10 because we had to go get it from Katarski.
Right.
So.
Right.
I showed you guys Minecraft Madness.
Yeah, right.
I showed you guys Minecraft Madness. You and Neil and myself. Right. Was it just the three of us that played?
It was just three of us.
So that was fun.
I don't remember what else we played. Anyway, so the hall opened and we went and we found Katarski and we grabbed that copy of Outlawed.
Yes.
And we just walked around for a little bit.
Yep, bought some stuff.
Just, you know, strutted around. It looked cool, like cool dudes.
Yeah, that's basically
it. Kind of our thing. What are we crossing over here? I hope that's... I mean, Siri hasn't said anything, so I guess
we're good.
Okay.
We need to go another 1.1 miles and then turn on to US 30 West.
Beautiful. Okay.
Ohio sucks. Ohio's road system is terrible, and, there's, like, not highways everywhere, like every other state in the United States.
There's just no highways that connect in this specific section.
It was poor planning. Shocker, Ohio. Shocker.
I don't know why you hate on Ohio.
I hate Ohio. I hate Ohio.
It's not nice, man.
Also, the speed limits in Ohio are all low.
Hey, builders, just so you know, I grew up in southern Ohio, so that's one of the reasons why he's so angry at Ohio.
Anyways, I don't feel like I have to hide my dislike for Ohio. I'm not a huge...
Thank you.
I'm also not a huge fan of Indiana, and I've said that many times, but I love Indianapolis. And hey, I like Origins now, so,
Jason just hates things.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you do.
To be fair, so does Rob. I learned it by watching you. But, anyways, Rob's a curmudgeon. So we got a copy of Outlawed and immediately said, let's go play Outlawed.
Right.
So Outlawed is a game by Ryan Cowler that Katarski is working on.
Turn left onto US 30 West.
And it is a bluffing game that is the... used to be called Help Wanted, so you've probably heard us talk about it after Unpub. As a game by Ryan Cowler. It is amazing. The artwork is amazing.
56 miles. Continue on US 30 West.
The game is just a bluffing game where you're trying to apprehend people. But as Neil kept telling people, it's a bluffing game where you earn points by figuring out when people are bluffing, and you bluff in response to that. And So
he's not wrong.
So the big thing with that game is most people when you first explain it to them, they're like, huh. And then you play like one turn and they're like, huh. And then you hit the second or third turn and they're like,
oh,
this is amazing. And there's a basic game and an advanced game. You always start with a basic game because the advanced game will just wreck people's minds.
Right.
So we start with a basic game, and then Neil and I found that if somebody got it really well, we would just introduce all the advanced cards. But yeah, if somebody got it kind of, we would introduce two advanced cards, mm-hmm, play a game, and then introduce the other two as well, okay, to kind of ease them into it. But we played that game with probably 8 or 10 people several times.
Over the course of the whole day.
Yeah, because yeah, I want to get the word out on that game. It's so good.
It's so good.
You know, I got a copy from Gitarski. I was like, I promise I will play this with so many people because...
And we'll talk about it on the show again and again and again.
Because it deserves it, right? It's just, oh my gosh, it's so great.
So good. Ryan turns out smart guy.
Yeah, Ryan, good job, man. So, Isaac, watch out. Ryan turns out is really smart and apparently good at bluffing.
Yeah.
And that Neil pointed out, too, one of the great things about the game is if you don't win, you still had tons of fun. Like, you really don't care if you didn't win.
Right.
Because you had so much fun playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone that we showed it to, they were like, can I go get this now?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it's going to be on Kickstarter. And they were like, I'm gonna back that. So So it was fantastic. Like, what great press for that game, you know, for it to just be so solid. Every time I've never seen someone play it and say I don't get it. They can never. And that's
So when you played it for the first time, you're like, I don't get it for like the first three games, and then after that you're like, oh,
right. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I was probably one of the slowest adopters of it.
Yeah,
because I just didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
But he's also cleaned up a lot of stuff since then.
Sure.
There were just a few little things that needed some tweaking.
Yeah.
And I think those worked because it was immediately approachable to everyone. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate enough to be able to give some feedback on that. I know Matt Loomis gave a lot of feedback as well from that session that we played at Unpub.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I am so jazzed about that game. I can't wait to play it with anyone who will listen.
So let's see. At one point, we played Tausch Rausch.
Oh, Tausch Rausch!
So thank you again, Chris, for bringing Chris Kobach for bringing Tausch Rausch. I think you brought it just for us.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, that is one of my favorites. So hey, Jason Gitarski, if you're listening to this, here's what I need you to do. That game is published in Germany or some crap, and they have an English version, but like it's not published in America. So I need you to play that game with Chris Kobach at Gen Con, and then I need you to buy the rights to do the North American version of that game, because it is amazing.
Or any publisher, please do that.
I'm just thinking of Jason in general.
I mean, yeah.
Look at the artwork. You look at the artwork it currently has, and then explain to me why Adam McIver can't make the artwork 1,000 times better.
Well, true.
And, yeah. Yeah, so you do that. I actually forgot. I was going to tell him this yesterday. I totally forgot. So, yeah, this is your reminder. Neil, yeah, you still owe Rob money. So, yeah.
Tausch Rausch. Tausch Rausch. Love it.
So, it's just a simple game where, like, you're matching cards to try and get... You're trying to make
sets.
It's
a set collection.
Yeah, it's a set collection game.
But what set you're going for could change at any moment because somebody else might grab the goal that you're searching for. And then...
And the sets are hard. A lot of the sets are really hard.
It's hard to get. And the only way you're... The best way to change... The most efficient way to change the structure of your hand is by discarding cards to the table and picking up something that's already there. And so in that way, there's a little bit of the Lost Cities two-player card game in it.
Right.
You're putting down one thing and picking up something else. This is a lot less... fiddly's not the right word. The Lost Cities game is risky. Tausch Rausch is not risky the way that is in that put it
with
down,
the exception of putting something down, you're basically helping someone else possibly.
You might be
you don't know,
Right. It's not as, you know, teeth gritting with its strategic decisions. It's light enough. There's still good, challenging strategic decisions to be made there, but it's not stressful.
Right.
You know, it's still super fun.
Right, yeah, and you get screwed by people all the time, not even on purpose, because they're just doing their own thing, and they do it before you do.
Yeah.
But it's super-duper fun. I loved it.
Was that the only No, that was one of only two published games we played the whole weekend. I did it anyway.
I played some other published games, I thought. Maybe not.
Except for Saloon Tycoon.
So, other games we played then, because this was basically a day of playing games.
Yeah.
So we played...
played more Tycoon.
Yep. Also played... Dead Last?
Dead Last.
Which, we play with 9 players. It's a 6 to 12 player game. It's basically Cash and Guns, but slightly different.
It's a simplified version of Cash and Guns, and by simplifying it in some ways, they were able to expand it out to a lot more players.
But...
And they simplified some of the rule stuff from Cash and Guns by putting in just social aspects.
Right. The problem is, with a 9-player game, and with a 12-player game, this would be even worse, basically in the game, everybody's constantly voting for people to knock them out. Think of almost like a werewolf, except for you keep respawning.
Yeah, it's werewolf mixed with Cash and Guns, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and it ends with Prisoner's Dilemma.
Yes. With a slight twist. Mm-hmm. You're voting to kick people out. And there was a lot of little fun deals as that was happening, but you can play an ambush card. So basically, if you were the person who got the most votes and you played the ambush card, you could then kick out one person who played the thing against you. So that was kind of neat, but you were constantly getting knocked out right away.
Yeah.
And then waiting 10 minutes for everyone else to finish the round. It's probably more like 5 minutes, but it felt like 10 when you were sitting there.
Yeah.
You played at, like, 25 points, which takes a long time with that many people.
Yeah, so it needs, like, I would say, the box says minimum of 6, but we agree, 5.
Yeah, I think 5 might be an ideal number to play that game with.
No reason not to play with 5. And I think 5 or 6 would be good. But even then, you want to make sure you're playing with people who really like social games like that. You know?
Right.
And don't mind some downtime between rounds.
Right.
So, I think it could be with the right group of people who love Werewolf, you know, people who really like social stuff and like the Screw Your Neighbor stuff in that way. I think people with that group, it could be a blast.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you and I are not so much into those styles of games.
Not as much. I mean, not when there's downtime. Like, I like those games when there's no downtime, right?
Yeah.
But we were playing with some incredibly fun people.
Yes.
We got to meet Nicole and Anthony,
yep.
who we've never met, but we've seen them a lot.
Right.
And they have to sit down and play, and they were fantastic to play with.
Yep.
Nicole is a riot when you kill her character.
Yep.
She swears a lot. it was cool. It was a good experience.
Yeah.
I believe the feedback I gave was, despite this game's best efforts, I still had a good time.
Yeah.
And it was only because of the people who were playing. But yeah, it was just rough because it was too much downtime for a social game. For any game, but social game, it's really hard because you want to be social and you're being told not to be social because you're dead.
Right.
So, I also got to play a game of Unreal Estate.
Oh, right.
And that went really well.
I forgot. We also played Lumberjacks.
Yeah. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So we played on Real Estate. I got some good thoughts on that from people. They really liked it. Neil best described it as... I said, in this game, you're going to turn in cards. You're going to trade in cards to try and score cards from this scrap pile. And Neil said, and you're always going to do it one turn too late. and he's right. That's the point of the game, is that it's stressful because you never know when somebody's going to steal something out from under you. And we had a good time. I felt like the new cards I've been testing out with it worked really well. Some of the new format stuff worked really well. I was very happy with it.
Yep.
And I get to meet with Mark soon because he got some feedback from some people as well.
Okay.
So we're going to meet up, talk about that. I'm pretty excited.
Cool.
So let's talk about Lumberjacks.
Lumberjack off.
So, yes, lumberjacking. Log jamming. So, that's probably enough of that. Anyways, we played it and got one really good piece of feedback that's going to make the game a lot better, mm-hmm. Which is... In the purpose of the game is, for those who don't remember, is you've got four types of cards, three of which are events in a lumberjack game. There is log rolling, sawing, and axe throwing. Mm-hmm. And the point is to decimate your opponent's 1 through 4 cards for those three events, because that's what you have, 1 through 4 of each of those. And then you have some lumberjack cards as well. The lumberjack cards are all higher in numbers because the game plays like a war style game.
Yeah.
But you have a lot more choices and a lot more influence in how you play it.
Yeah. At one point it was Neil playing with somebody else. Who was that?
Ken, I think his friend's name
Ken?
Is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Neil and Ken. So I think I played that game with you 5 times maybe.
Yeah.
And I have never gotten it. I never understood what was going on.
Right.
Never got the strategy. And it wasn't until I was watching those guys play and then listening to them talk about their strategies after it that it clicked for me. And then I was like, oh, wait, there actually is strategy here.
Right.
And I totally missed it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even I struggled because you said, what are the strategies in this game? And I said, here's the strategy I use. And you said, are there any other strategies? And I said, I don't know. This is the strategy I use. And then Neil and Ken pointed out, like, 4 other ways you can play.
Yeah.
And then they did something. So the Matt Loomis had given me some great feedback about getting rid of the 4s and the 3s. So how to protect them. And the idea that if you beat a 4 with an even number, you just keep it. You can put it into your discard. But if somebody beats a 4 with an odd number, it gets trashed. It's gone out of the game.
Yeah.
And that's the idea, is you want to do to your opponent. And the 3s are the opposite. It's with evens and odds. And then the 2s and the 1s always get knocked out, but allow you to do something special when they do. Well, I'm going to keep the 2 that way, because it lets you kind of stack your deck when you lose a 2. But they said it'd be great if the 1s could be a little more permanent and a little harder to get rid of. And so I was trying to think of what I hadn't done in the game, and it occurred to me that, hey, what if lumberjacks can beat them, but they can't make you just... The lumberjack card can never make you discard a 1. So, or to trash a 1, right?
Yeah.
So that actually is going to be great. I can't wait to make a proto of that and try that out, because that just adds another layer of strategy to the game.
Yeah, for sure.
And instead of making you a couple of the simple strategies become less viable because of the 1s, it's going to make you diversify more.
Yeah.
Because like Neil's strategy and my strategy that we're specifically using both don't work anymore when you add that in, and that's a good thing, because it means that you have to think harder about your strategy. So I'm really proud of how that game's working out. I mean, it was just a dorky 36 card game. Actually, it started out as like a dorky 54 card game, and Katarski helped me get it down to 36. I toyed with the idea that I could actually get it down even lower than that, but I'm not sure. It might lose some of its oomph, so I'm not sure, but anyways, very, very happy with that.
Good.
So I also was told to stop by and see the publisher again, right?
Yeah.
So I did that. So I went over about midday. I stopped over and was like, hey, you said stop by. How's it going? And the publisher said, oh, I talked to some other guys. We still think this sounds really, really interesting. And he talked through some specifics that made me know that he really liked it and had been thinking about it, right? With, of course, no promises at this point. But then said, I'd like a prototype. Like, I normally would wait a little longer, but I'd like a prototype on this now, if you've got it. Well, of course, I have my one little prototype that I made. It's got handwritten notes on it.
You've been, like, constantly revising it since GrandCon last year.
Right. So, and also at Unpub, I revised it a bunch.
Yeah.
So, there are a few components that are very dear to me that I wasn't willing to give up. So I said yes, and then I immediately went to the vendor hall and bought some new components. I spent like $10 on components to put in there
to swap out,
dice and stuff, so I could keep the ones that are, because the die in there that I use is big orange die. It's oversized D6, and I've had it forever. I got it like in a random dice thing at Gen Con one year, but like it's a die that when I need to use 1D6 in a game, I always use that one.
It's your special die.
Yeah, well, it's big. It's easy to read. There's no like, where did my die go? Like, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
So I was traded that out, and put in some extra tokens for the punch it rules. And yeah, so they said they will send it back. This company's really good about sending prototypes back, which is great, because I know a lot of game companies are not good at that.
Yeah,
so.
I've never had a proto return, AJ, looking at you. Never did get my Tycoon proto back. I really just like those cubes at some point. But, you know, whatever, man. Hey, you bought my game, so it's cool, buddy. It's cool. I still love you.
But in the contract, did it mention that he owns the prototype? I bet it didn't.
I don't remember.
This is how publishers are actually making money. Someday, somewhere, there's a secondary market where they're selling old prototype pieces.
Old prototype components, yeah, right.
So that was very nice of them. And I got to meet two other important people at the publisher.
Yep.
And they were super nice. And the one of them specifically who had heard about the game was really geeked about it.
Yeah.
Sounded stoked. Yeah, this could still go nowhere, but to have this much interest... from a publisher like this, it really, really helps me out. You know, it really makes me feel validated that this is a good game. And, you know, I feel like this is the best thing I've designed so far. So it feels really good to have such validation for it. So fingers crossed that that they'll pick it up. And that would be awesome. You know, that'd be my second game picked up, and I'd be super, super jazzed about that.
Fingers and toes crossed.
Yeah. So that was that, and
let's see, what else did I play? I played the new version of Curiosities by Chris and Suzanne.
Yeah, I didn't get to try that, but I got to watch you. It looked like fun.
Yeah, it was neat. It was good, kind of symbol matching. I mean, there's some set collection stuff, but you know, you make a set here versus a set in the open area, and the number of that set that you have. The total value of the set you have is multiplied by the number of those cards in the open area. But if too many of those are out there, then it kills the value.
Right, because then it becomes too cool.
Too cool, right. So. Yeah, so some cool ideas there. I like that a lot. I think with good... I mean, it's a real simple game. I think with some cool art on top of it, I think that it could be a real fun filler game.
Yeah,
And just ready to go with cool style.
Yeah. Cool art, some cool iconography, I think.
Yeah.
Since the icons are so important, from what I gathered from watching it.
Right.
And that game would be golden, yeah. So.
We also played Dubai.
Yes, we did.
Chris and Suzanne.
Yeah.
Dubai is, it's like a worker placement.
Building
thing. Yep. You're collecting resources and building buildings in the United Arab Emirates in Dubai.
Yep.
It's got a cool concept in there where you place your workers in one of three places, and they're kind of rotating around a circle, and so
they're all like in a line.
Right, they're all in a line, and so when you place a guy on a location, you don't place him on a location. You actually put him on the track, and he goes to the front of the line. And then after he takes his action, whatever worker is at the end of that line goes next.
Yeah, and they get to pick their worker up and put it on any of the three tracks, including the same track.
Right.
So what's two things that I think are really cool about that. One is it's a unique way to do worker placement, but two, it has kind of a time track mechanic that's been popular lately.
Right.
Where the idea, like, if I take a big turn and take a ton of actions, like Takedo, right, has that. If I move a long ways down the track, and then you're going to get more actions before I go on. Rocky Road a la Mode from Katarsky that Mills designed also has a thing similar to that.
Yeah.
But Dubai uses it in a way that I've never seen used before.
It's clever.
By mixing it with the worker placement like that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. I think that was the thing for me that shined the most out of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, and we talked about that a lot. We had a lot of fun with it. I think they have a challenge there with a graphic design challenge, and Chris and I talked about this. I think if they can get that picked up, and it sounds like they have some interest. I don't know any details of that, and I probably shouldn't say anything more than that. I think that the publisher is going to have to do some work with iconography. And,
right. Absolutely.
And, yeah. Link. Good. Strong graphic design will help that game enormously.
Right.
Because for us, everything was just black and white on a piece of paper and text and no icons, and it was kind of hard to remember. Hey, does that connect? What does that connect to? What does that mean?
Right.
With good, strong iconography, I think that will take a game that I struggled to get my head around all the stuff going on there through half the game. I'm still struggling halfway through the game, and I think it would that problem would blink out of existence.
Right.
But that's going to be a real challenge for whoever their graphic designer is to make that flow nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be able to do it, but it will take support.
Possible.
I mean, I think there's five districts you're building, and I think icons for each of the districts on the edges would make a big difference because it would allow you to match those up.
Right.
Instead of having to look and say, which districts were, you know,
and
so.
And to think about how the different districts can be adjoined to each other. Yeah.
The way they could be adjoined was pretty cool, but iconography would make it a lot more understandable on the fly, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a lot of fun.
What else?
Did we play anything? We played a lot of games of Outlawed, like we said.
A lot of Outlawed. I did manage to play Scrappers with a person.
Yep.
I played Scrappers, and, you know, and I hadn't actually played that game in, like, a month because I switched off on that to work on Treasure Trove.
Right.
And so I had put it down for a month and hadn't touched it in a while. And even getting ready to go to Origins, I just kind of spiffed up a couple of the components and reprinted a couple of sheets and tossed it in the box and left. Didn't even play it before I left. So, sitting down and play it again, we played a three-player game. Sitting down and play it again after a long time, was a little... at first, I was a little nervous, like, oh, holy crap, what did I forget, you know? I just fell right back into it, and I was happy to remember so clearly how it worked, and it's a real simple structure, but yeah, man, I really feel like that game is about a half step away from 100%.
Awesome.
I feel super super good about it. I'm
awesome.
Really happy. And what a crazy thing to have come together so fast, you
right?
Know? And just the benefit that I got out of Unpub was incredible. Not to roll back to Unpub praise for too long,
right, but yeah.
It's just every time I'm reminded of the value of Unpub, I'm overwhelmed by it.
Yep.
That you can get years worth of progress done in a couple of days.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's just so amazing.
Yep.
And you know, and on this subject, so we talked with a few people about the contrast between Gen Con and Origins and Unpub and like a proto-spiel, right?
Yep.
And talked about the kind of different perspective on that stuff. And specifically, proto-spiel compared to Unpub. And the person we were talking to said he prefers proto-spiels because he preferred that atmosphere of everyone's relaxing. It's designers with the designers, right? Everybody's just hanging out and talking about their games, talking about design. And he said he loved that it was just such a creative experience and such an informal and relaxed environment. Whereas, you okay there?
Yeah,
okay. Whereas at Unpub, everyone's there to accomplish something, right? The goal for everyone, all the designers there, is to get a publisher.
It's twofold. It's to get a lot of feedback and get a publisher.
So the outward goal is I'm here to play test my games and make my games better, get a lot of good feedback. But the unstated goal that everyone has in their heart is I want to sell this game to a publisher while I'm here.
Right.
And people like me make that worse when I say, oh yeah, you know, 2015 I sold two games to publishers.
Right,
Unpub,
right.
You know?
And not normal.
Shame on me for perpetuating that. And I shouldn't have done that. And I'm thinking more about that. And that's the wrong attitude to take.
Right.
You know? Because that did not happen to me at Unpub this year. But what I did get is the intended benefit. What, right. What Unpub is about is to make your games better. And that's what I got out of it. And,
right.
And I'm really happy about that. And,
right.
And I don't... I want to remind myself that perspective is important. It's important for me to have the same perspective and to make sure I share that and correct myself since we have an audience, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
So, last night, when I was playing Outlawed, you played Treasure Trove, but then you were playing another game.
Yeah. Right. So, just to finish up real quick on Scrappers. Kind of one of the last fiddly things was the game end scenario, and talking with the two people that I played it with, a week. I think we put the final nail in that picture frame.
Oh, good.
You know, that's probably a bad analogy. I was going to say coffin, but that's...
Sounds like you're killing right, the game, so that's not good, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so I think we finally figured out the best way to track endgame on that, and it's like, it's super thematic and super easy, and I'm super happy with that. So I feel fantastic about the game, and I should probably say... No, I'm not going to say that. So we'll move on. So the other game I was playing... So I played Treasure Trouble with Anthony and with Roger Hicks.
Yeah, Roger.
So they played it. They played it a couple of times, and they both had good feedback. Anthony actually identified a potential problem that I totally missed, and he said, "Hey, this is a problem." And I was like, "No, it's not." He said, "No, really, it's a problem." I'm like, "You're crazy. It's not a problem." And he said, "No, for real, it's a problem." And I said, "Oh yeah, that's totally a problem." And so that's fixed now. That's great. So good. Thank you, Anthony. I'm sorry I don't know your last name. And then Roger had an 18-card game that he was working on.
And cool.
I don't think he did his for the butt check contest. I think he did his just to do his.
Oh, cool.
Because he had an idea for it. And I want to say it was called Secret Assassin. Or I think it was called Secret Assassin. Or the name, if it was not that, it was very similar to that. And so that was the thing where... each player has 9 cards. You have 7 cards face down in front of you and 2 cards in your hand. And every card is... So everybody has, like, 2 decoys, but then all the other cards are different unique cards. And every card has an attack power and a defend power. And so on your turn, you pick one of the cards that are face down, and you flip it face up, and you lay it next to one of your opponent's face down cards. And that means that person is going to attack... Okay, so you attack that person. That person then reveals that card, and depending on how those things line up, sometimes you can kill the character, sometimes you can't. There are various effects, but kind of the neat thing then is you both know what cards are out there, right? Uh-huh. So now you have more information. So the card that was revealed for the defender, if it doesn't die, then that card stays out there, face up.
Okay.
But the attacker... After somebody attacks, Roger called it go dark. You pick them up and take them back into your hand, and then now you have 3 cards in your hand, and you put one back face down. So you can be rearranging and reorganizing what 7 cards are out there. And so after an attack, you know, the assassin, he's a secret assassin, he reveals himself to do the attack, and then assuming he's not killed in the process, he goes dark, he disappears, right? The defender doesn't know what happened to him.
Cool.
Okay. And so by changing that, changing the arrangement of your cards on the table, you can mess with the opponent about who they think they're attacking. So it's, you know, hidden information, and you want to try and, there's some deduction there. I want to try and figure out who's where so that I can attack the right guy with the right attacker. You know, certain people are weak to other attackers and so forth.
Right.
You play until all 7 of somebody's defenders are gone. So first person to kill all the other guys, people are the winners.
Cool.
It was cool. I think there are some rules tweaks that he needs to make and some card text things to adjust. It was also just plain text on a white card.
Right.
So it was a little tough to read. So things like better iconography, some streamlined... statements on those cards.
Right, which I'm assuming will all come with edits as he moves
with
forward,
edits so. And revisions, yeah. So cool. I think that was really fun. I liked that a lot. That it was a bit of a brain burner, and I think by the time we played it was pretty late at night. So it was a little late for me to really click. But yeah, it was neat.
Cool.
What else did we play yesterday? Gosh, we played so many games, man.
So a game on... This was actually back on Friday. I didn't play, but I got to sit and walk through... Again, have played it before, was Flooded Forest with Robert Johnson. And we got to look at that, and that was a good time.
We played that on Pub.
Yeah, we played it on Pub. Really, really loved it. He's made some great tweaks, and he had some things he was talking about with... kind of rules that he felt were a little too abstract.
Uh-huh.
So we kind of talked through some of them. I gave him some advice. Hopefully it was helpful. You know, just saying, well, if you want this to be thematic, then why not do X or Y, or here's the theme justification for this rule. And
yeah,
and some of that I think sounded good to him, some of it not so much, but I mean, that's what you expect when you get feedback, right?
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I'll never be offended if you don't take any of my feedback, but
yep.
You asked, I'm happy to give my thoughts and hope that something is a gem that helps you out. So that game could really go places. I love it so much. I'm always excited to see what he's doing with it. Still one of the coolest themes I've seen in quite a while. The idea of the Amazon flooding.
Yeah,
you know, and,
I think it's super unique.
It's cool. Like, it would be a great game for, like, if you've got it simple enough for, like, school stuff, too,
yep.
Right? Because it teaches about the ecosystem, right? Like, and how it works. So,
I think it's a different theme, but it's also instantly familiar and understandable.
Right, which is, that's the key, right? You want a theme that's different, but when somebody hears it, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. I did buy one game.
Yeah?
I bought, it's called Holmes, Sherlock, and Mycroft. It's I don't recall the publisher off the top of my head here, but it's a two-player worker placement and set collection game.
Okay.
Those are the two things that Christine and I love to play, especially to get together. We love two-player worker placement games. We love set collection games. And so the two of those together. Also, I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan.
Indeed you are.
Yeah. And so to get all that together in one package and two-player, specifically designed for two players, that is right up my alley. Chris Kobach actually said, because he and I are talking about two-player stuff, and he texted me later on in the afternoon, and he said, oh, hey, you need to go look at this. And it's great. I went to the booth, and I demoed it with one of the guys there, and it just takes 7 turns. It takes place over the course of a week, right? So 7 days. So 7 turns, and we were just about to start turn 6, and then I got a text from Chris saying, hey, they were going to start playing Dubai. And so I said to the guy that I was doing the demo with, I said, hey, man, I just got buzzed. I got to run, but give me a copy. I want it. I need that. And he seemed really disappointed. Like, I thought he was going to be happy to sell a copy, but he seemed really disappointed that he wasn't going to get to finish the game with me. So that was funny.
That is.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we're already over time.
Oh, geez, we've been talking too much. Okay, one last thing I want to say. Shout out. A good friend of the show, you know who you are, had a publisher meeting with Mayfair this weekend. And I think it went, from what I heard, I think it went really well. I think Mayfair gave a lot of positive feedback. And I want to say to that person, you know who you are, I am super impressed, because I haven't had the cojones yet to actually ask Mayfair for a pitch.
Right.
And you did, and you just showed me up. So, good job to you. You're already doing this better than I'm doing this.
Yes. No, that is... When I heard that, too, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Way to come out swinging.
Right.
That is awesome.
Right.
So,
good job. Okay. Wow. Are we really over time, man?
Yeah.
We're talking a lot.
Over an hour already.
For a day and a half of an event. And, yeah.
Yeah.
We had a good time at Origins.
We missed a lot of stuff, so...
Yeah, we had a good time at Origins.
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. Okay, thank you, guys. So we're going to record again. So next week we'll also be recording... We're going to start recording that immediately after this, so there'll be another car ride episode. And then we should be back to our normal studio schedule.
Yep, we will have a normal show. It'll just be in the car.
Right.
So yeah.
Anyway. So thanks, everybody, for listening. You know that stuff. Follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg, at JASlingerland, at Orly_design, Google Voice 770 tell BTG, email buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com, buildinggamepodcast.com. We'll see you guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast.